Okay, good morning. Thank you for joining us for this morning's press conference. Some of you may know that Iowa has a very unique and long history with the country of China and with the new president, Xi Jinping, who was here, of course, last February of last year. In 1985, President Xi, then a local party leader and head of the Food Association of Shijiazhuang, made his first trip to the United States as part of a small delegation that was sponsored by the sister states. During this visit, he saw firsthand that Iowans are hardworking and sincere people and take pride in our work and the products that we produce. President Xi and his delegation never forgot the wonderful welcome they received in Iowa and the great people that they met here, and they have fond memories of 1985, and they call us old friends. Now, as the president of China, a country with 1.3 billion people, the state of Iowa has a great opportunity to further expand our partnerships with the People's Republic of China. So today, I'm pleased to share with you that I will be traveling to China, leaving here on April 12th for a very brief trade mission, along with a delegation of three other governors and 46 people representing the state of Iowa. These trade missions are strategically planned and include an agenda packed full of meetings. This trade mission will be no different. We will be spending 4 full days in China, visiting the cities of Beijing, Tianjin, Baoding City, and Shijiazhuang, our sister state of Hebei. The trade mission will include meetings with senior government officials, current and potential business partners, a U.S.-China Governors Forum, and activities recognizing Iowa's 30th anniversary with our sister state, the Hebei Province. In addition to the other governors, Debbie Durham, director of our Economic Development Authority, will accompany me on this trade mission, along with Iowa businesses, educational, and agriculture commodity organizations. A full list of the companies and organizations is in our press release. We are looking forward to this upcoming trade mission and to strengthening our economic partnership with the people of China. I'm pleased to now turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds.
Well, good morning and thank you, Governor. I would also like to take a moment to echo the Governor's remarks on how there is tremendous economic opportunities with the country of China. I've had the opportunity to travel to China 3 times, and trust me, the state of Iowa is seen as a valued trading partner, providing very safe and reliable products for their people. It was just last year during President Xi's visit to Iowa that contracts were signed for $4.3 billion with the in soybean and soy products. And these contracts were a direct result of efforts made by the state of Iowa and the Iowa Soybean Association. The building and maintaining of relationships with China is so important, not only for Iowa's farmers, but for our entire state, as it helps to create jobs for Iowans. In fact, according to the Business Roundtable, international trade supports about 430,000 jobs in Iowa. And with every dollar in farm exports, $1.31 is stimulated in the U.S. economy. I returned a few weeks ago from a trade mission trip to Vietnam and the Philippines, and I had a phenomenal trip, again, promoting Iowa and our products. In countries like Vietnam and the Philippines and China, personal and face-to-face meetings are seen as very important in creating and maintaining business partnerships and really building that relationship with both countries. The Governor and I have been working hard to grow Iowa's global partnerships abroad, and as you can see, it's starting to make a difference. Iowa exports grew by almost 10% between 2011 and 2012, and that's almost double what the national average is. Last year, our state exported more than $14.6 billion worth of products, and our goal, of course, is to continue to increase that number. So trade missions, just like the one that the Governor is getting ready to lead, is a great opportunity to showcase not only our state, but our products. So before I end, I would like to invite Kirk Leakes from the Iowa Soybean Association to the podium to share really his experiences with international trade missions and how those trade missions have had an impact on Iowans, Iowa farmers, and our Iowa economy. Kirk?
Well, thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Again, my name is Kirk Glades. I am the Chief Executive Officer of the Iowa Soybean Association. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to share a few thoughts and observations regarding the importance of the Chinese market for Iowa and for Iowa soybean farmers. But first, I'd like to thank Governor Branstad and Lieutenant Governor Reynolds not only for this opportunity, but also their ongoing willingness to assist efforts to increase the export of soybeans to China. They've always been willing to host trade delegations as they come to Iowa, and they have certainly spent time and effort coming with us to China to represent not only the state of Iowa, but also Iowa soybean farmers. China is by far the largest export market for soybeans in the world. Last year, they imported approximately 60 million metric tons of soybeans, while the rest of the world combined imported less than 35 million metric tons. To put that Chinese number in perspective, the 60 million metric tons they imported equals nearly four times Iowa's total annual production. One out of every four rows of soybeans grown in the U.S. ends up in China, a number that we anticipate will soon be one out of every three rows of soybeans will end up in China. As the Lieutenant Governor indicated and the Governor indicated, when President Xi was in Iowa last February, they signed contracts totaling over 4 billion in U.S. soybeans. By the end of last year, the Chinese had purchased more than $15 billion worth of U.S. soybeans and soybean products. I've had the opportunity to travel to China more than a dozen times in the last 10 years, and it has become increasingly clear to me that the special relationship that exists between the state of Iowa and the country of China is well known and recognized all over China. This special relationship is a direct result of the willingness of Iowa leaders like Governor Branstad and Lieutenant Governor Reynolds and many others who have invested time and effort to build this relationship. President Xi, when he met with us, encouraged us to use this special relationship to expand the trade between the United States and China. But he also noted that agriculture has been the ballast and the ship of trade between our two countries. When the trade waters have been rough or choppy, agricultural trade has helped keep the ship balanced and moving forward. And like everyone else who's honored to be part of this delegation, I look forward to once again representing the Iowa soybean industry and the state of Iowa in this upcoming trip with the governor. Thank you.
Okay, we'd open it to your questions on this subject first.
Governor, when was the last time that you were in China?
May of last year. And that was a return, you know, we had the reunion here in February, and at that meeting in Muscatine, then Vice President Xi Jinping said, I want to do a reunion with the four people that came with me and my old friends from Iowa in Beijing. So we went late May and early June. We had dinner with him and his wife and with the other four that were on that delegation. And the other thing that I found out is he not only met us inside the banquet hall, he came out and met us outside in this beautiful area that they had. And I was told this is of really significance. It was in the China daily newspaper the same day that the Diamond Jubilee was going on in Britain. So you had the Queen of England on one page, then you had the old friends from Iowa with President Xi and his delegation on the other page. So we do feel we have a real special relationship there, and he refers to us as his old friends, and we want to build on that, and this is another opportunity to do that.
And are you going to see him again this time?
Well, we hope to. That hasn't been finalized yet, but we've requested a meeting, and we're working with Madam Lee, who's in charge of their friendship group, and she's the one that was my interpreter when I met with him in September of 2011, and she also is the one that made the arrangements for the Chinese provincial governors to meet with the American governors in Salt Lake City when we had that governor's conference in 2011. So I'm very hopeful that we will get that opportunity. I will get that opportunity to meet with him. I mentioned actually at the dinner we hosted here in February of last year that I wanted to be the first American governor to meet with him as the new president of China, and of course he is now the president of China.
The 18th.
So it's the 12th through the 18th, but it's a long flight. So it's about 4 days on the ground over there, and we're going to four cities. So it's going to be a very busy packed with a lot of meetings, but and it's a large delegation, 46. I think this is the largest delegation that I have taken. And this is just from Iowa. That's not counting the other three governors and whoever they bring with them. But my first trip to China, which was in September, October of 1984, we had 50 people. And to my knowledge, that was the biggest trade mission we've ever had. So this will be very close to that. The delegation basically pays their own way. I think the Economic Development Foundation will pay for myself and Debbie Durham, but the delegation members pay their own way.
Why are you sharing your entree with the governors of Virginia and Wisconsin?
Well, because, first of all, we've had this relationship between the national governors and the Chinese governors, and it started with that meeting that was held in Salt Lake City, and Madam Lee actually encouraged me to lead this group, and so I don't think it hurts for us to, and in fact, when I was over there before, Virginia was having some problems with apples being imported, and I got a message through on that, and that got resolved. So I mean, helping out your other colleagues is not a bad thing, and I think it's, you know, we have a unique and long-standing relationship. Nobody can take that away from us, but if we can improve the relations for the whole nation and for other states and increase trade opportunities, I think that's a very positive thing. Sure. I mean, this was put together by the National Governors Association, and the Democratic governors were invited. They're just this is the ones whose schedules fit to go. So this was actually put together by the National Governors Association, not the Republican Governors Association, and it was open to governors from any state. But, you know, governors have demanding and busy schedules. And many governors of both parties have been to China. Other questions on this subject? Well, he's also been helpful to us, and he was in Cedar Rapids for me last fall, so I'm sure that Governor Walker will be very helpful, and you know, we have a good relationship with all the governors and try to work together on these things.
Another topic, have you met with Senator Grostal? He said he was going to talk with you about the meeting.
No, not yet, but I do have time set aside on my schedule to meet with senators. I believe that the people that I've appointed to the regions are very well qualified and have the experience and the ability that we need on the regions now, and I'm very hopeful that, and I've offered to meet with every senator. I've written a personal letter to each senator explaining the reasons why I've chosen the three people I've chosen, the unique background and experience that each of them has, and why I think they should be confirmed. And I would go back to, you know, I saw what happened back when I was governor before, when they rejected Marvin Pomerantz, who turned out to be one of the best regents we ever had, and David Fisher. And David Fisher was later confirmed at another time. But I just think that litmus tests are not appropriate, that people ought to be judged based on their knowledge and experience and leadership ability. And I've chosen strong people who have, I think, unique characteristics and leadership ability to really lead our regions at this time. And I would especially say, under Craig Lang's leadership, we've chosen two great university presidents. We've addressed some long-standing problems, such as the tuition set-aside, the transparency problems, and the problem of funding for the University of Northern Iowa through the region's formula due to the fact that they serve primarily Iowa students. I think those are very significant things, and maybe the most significant for students and their families is, if the budget I've recommended is approved, we're looking at, for the first time in 30 years, no increase in tuition. And there are years in the past when previous administrations we saw double-digit increases, sometimes as high as 18% in tuition in a single year. Well, I'm not going to speculate on that. I believe that they should be confirmed on their merits, and I'm going to work very hard. That's why I've written personal letters to each of the senators. That's why I've offered to meet with them if they have any questions or want additional information.
Governor Mike Ronstadt said he could deliver a status update Friday. Are these nominees in trouble?
Well, I guess. You know, I have been through this a few times before, and I've heard these predictions time and time again. And you don't know until you actually come to a vote. And I believe, based on the merits and the experience and the abilities of these individuals, that people ought to give them another look. And I'm very hopeful in the end of the day that they will do the right thing and confirm these people who really have outstanding background and experience. You know, having a doctor on the Board of Regents, which Subhash Sahai adds, is something I think with the University of Iowa Hospitals is important. Having somebody with construction background and knowledge, when you got over $1 billion of projects, building and rebuilding projects, I think could save significant money and add some really great expertise. And I've already talked about the experience and leadership that Craig Lang has provided.
Are you confident they'll get 24 Republican votes?
Yes.
Governor,
well, I believe that it should. I believe that these individuals deserve that opportunity to be confirmed by the Senate, and I think they have the background and the experience to do so. I think it's wrong to start putting political litmus tests to people that are appointed. I think that's a bad precedent to establish, and it's not something that should be done. People ought to be evaluated based on their knowledge and experience and leadership ability. And I think each of these three individuals has some unique experience and qualifications that will really strengthen and improve the Board of Regents.
So are you ruling out the possibility that they will withdraw?
Well, if they make a decision that they don't want to go forward, that's different. I'm certainly not going to recommend that they withdraw, because I think they're very well qualified. I put a lot of thought into the kind of people that I wanted to have on the Board of Regents, the kind of strengths that we needed to add to the Regents that weren't there today. And I think, you know, both Dr. Sahai and Robert Kramer add some strengths. We don't have that construction background and experience with all these projects coming forward. We don't have a medical doctor on there presently. Historically, we have had. I think those are, and Craig Lang obviously has been the leader for the last 2 years. During that time, Stephen Leith was chosen, and recently Bill Rude for the University of Northern Iowa. The process that they used was open and transparent. We didn't have the glitches they've had in the past with previous processes that were chosen to use to get university presidents. And they're addressing some of these tough issues like the tuition set aside, which is something that a lot of parents and students have been upset about, transparency, which I think is needed throughout government, and also the funding problems that the University of Northern Iowa has experienced because of a very old formula that really penalizes them because they're primarily Iowa students going there, whereas the other universities get substantial more out-of-state tuition money. I believe that he will, because his misgivings about big contributors just don't apply to these individuals. First of all, I would point out that one of them contributed to my primary opponent, one of them contributed to my general election opponent, and the other was a very modest contributor to my campaign. So they weren't selected because of contributions. They were selected because of unique knowledge and experience. And I think once he gets a chance, I know he has some frustrations with some of the people who are appointed in the past, but this is not the past. This is about the people that are up now, and I'm confident they will be approved, you know, that he will approve them along with the other Republican senators. But I also believe that this is not a partisan matter. These people should be selected and bring in unique characteristics. You know, in the past, the Senate has confirmed a wife of a United States senator, an unsuccessful candidate for governor, and many other people that did have partisan backgrounds and had been big contributors. I'm not looking at the past. I'm looking at the future, and I'm looking what the needs of the regents are and the kind of leadership we need to have as we work to make sure that we're providing the best quality education for our kids and that we indeed are trying to help us keep the costs competitive and also improve the graduation rate for all of our students. No, I guess, you know, the family leader has been not exactly my biggest fan, but I don't choose people on the basis of that. I chose them based on their experience and knowledge. His leadership of the Associated General Contractors, which is a large contracting group, and chosen by his peers to lead that group, I think he did a very fine job in that. He also, I think it was his firm, do you remember a few years ago when they rescued a guy out of the Des Moines River that was drowning? That was his firm that did that. He and his wife have been very compassionate people. All the experience I've had with him, he's a very fair and reasonable individual. He was an outstanding member of the school board in Johnston, which is a very good school system in our state. And I believe his background and knowledge in the construction industry would be a great asset that we really need with all these projects that are coming forward. We will have. In fact, Michael Bougelot has been working with, and you know, that is, I think, about ready to be introduced in the House of Representatives. We're very encouraged that we have, and there's other states, by the way. I think Arkansas just recently had something similar to this that was approved. And so there's other states that are also trying to do unique things to really change the way healthcare is delivered from, you know, moving away from an unsustainable, costly system that doesn't have personal responsibility to one where people take some ownership of their own health and can work with us and not only make sure that they have coverage, but that they also are looking at the most efficient and economical way to get that, not going to the emergency room, but instead of having a medical home and working with their local physicians. Well, as I said, this is going to be paid for by the foundation that the Economic Development Authority has. So there won't be any cost to the state. It'll be paid for by the foundation, which receives private contributions.
Do you know the price tag, though?
No, I don't know. I mean, it's not cheap to fly clear across the world. And you know, we'll be four different cities on this trip. But I think the benefit to the state of Iowa is tremendous. We already have seen, you've heard from Kurt Leeds, the fact that China is purchasing more soybeans than all the rest of the world combined, almost twice as much as the rest of the world last year. And that's going to continue to grow. Corn, they're picking up their export. And Iowa is a leading soybean producing state, the leading corn producing state, the leading pork producing state. And there's also opportunity, I think, for Chinese investments that will create jobs here in Iowa, as well as Iowa companies like John Deere and Vermeer and Monsanto and many others, and Principal, of course, is working over there to try to get into that market. And Xi Jinping personally mentioned both the Principal and Pioneer when he was here February of last year. So, yes, we see the benefits being many, many times what the costs are going to be. And again, as I said, the taxpayers are not paying for this. It's the foundation.
Jason Noble, final question.
Governor, on your health care plan, has there been a delay or a reason why we haven't seen the bill introduced?
Well, we've been working on this, and as I said, it will be introduced this week. And we want to do this right, and we want to do it well. And our focus is on really having something that's going to make Iowa a healthier state and get people to take ownership of their own health, and making sure that everybody has a stake in this and that everybody is covered, but also everybody has an individual responsibility to do their part.
Are you worried that we're running out of time in the legislative session here to go through a big piece of legislation?
No. My biggest concern is that the delay in the Senate on addressing reforming the education system, that passed the House on the 20th of February, and just recently it's passed the Senate. It's going to have to go to conference committee. We want to get that resolved. My first priority is to get education reform, then property tax relief, and then the healthy estate. But those are the three priorities in that order.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.